Welcome to this special episode of the Career Confidence Podcast, where I'm sitting down again with Catherine Boychuk, the CTO of EY. Now, for those of you that don't know Catherine, please go back and listen to previous episodes that I've done. She was a recent panel guest at our Sisterhood Social, and the feedback from that event and what she said and the value she gave was incredible. So today, we dive deeper into the topic of AI and what we all need to do to make sure that we are in the driver's seat of our careers. Today's podcast left me feeling incredibly optimistic about the future. There's a lot of doomsday information out there right now, and it's just not Catherine's view of what's coming. She sees a world where the possibilities are endless, where AI can transform lives, businesses, individuals, day-to-day lives. And it's incredibly empowering. The one thing I absolutely love that Catherine said is instead of seeing AI as this sort of technology that's confusing, let's see it as magic. What can we create with this magic, with this new tool that we have access to? And really, every single person can be involved in this next tech revolution, which is incredibly exciting. So enjoy today's episode. Take notes. Don't just passively listen to this. Really think about how you can apply what gets discussed today in your own lives and your own career. Now, over to Catherine. Catherine, welcome back to the Career Confidence Podcast today. I'm really excited to have this conversation. You were recently on our panel event, the Sisterhood Social, which, wow, what an event that was. For those that haven't listened to that episode yet, please go back and listen. Catherine absolutely dropped some bombshells, some hard truths for us all. So I recommend, we'll link below, you go and listen to that. But for those that haven't listened to your other podcast, The Sisterhood Social, bring us up to speed with what's going on in your world, your new role, CTO of EY, very impressive. Talk to me about what's been happening from your end.
There's never been a dull time really in technology over the last couple of decades that I've been in tech, but I was penning a piece, you know, over the Christmas break around what are the things that we need to keep in mind in 2025. And one of the things that I wrote down was the pace is going to feel uncomfortably fast, the pace in which technology advancements are made, the pace of disruption, the pace of upskilling, the pace of innovation is going to be faster than it ever has been in human history. And so, you know, in my role as CTO at EY, you know, my job is to do two things. One is to give our people what they need in terms of upskilling and access to the best tools and the best alliance partnerships in the world. And two is to give our clients access to the best partnerships and the best AI capability and capacity in the world so that we can help them on their technology journeys, particularly in the age of AI.
Well, yeah, there's no denying that change is coming at a very, very, very rapid pace, like crazy. In fact, the adoption has just been, well, it's just been incredible to watch. Like, you know, even my parents who are in their late 60s, they know ChatGPT, like they're using it every day. I mean, I've told them to, of course, as well, but it took them a lot longer to get on the internet, for example. It took them a lot longer to have an email. So it's been really interesting to watch people adopt AI a lot faster than perhaps what they did the internet and websites. And, you know, all of that was quite slow. Whereas I'm noticing people are really embracing this technology. And it seems to be a race now of like, who's going to win this next sort of technology revolution. But I was reading the other day that $300 billion is going to be invested in AI in 2025. And I can't help but think, Catherine, what does that mean for our society? What does that look like? I don't think anyone really knows, but I'd love to sort of maybe start there of your predictions, what you're seeing, and get some insights into maybe behind the curtain of what's really going on in businesses right now.
There's a number of things I draw to your attention. The first is to say, you know, the Tech Council have released a really wonderful report. If you haven't had a look at it, late last year, they did a deep dive into the impact of AI and what it could mean for the Australian economy. And, you know, the things that stood out for me from that report, the first was the upside of AI. You know, it's $115 billion impact to the Australian economy. That's with a B. And that just means the opportunity is enormous for the Australian public. The second stat that stood out to me was, you know, we need 200,000 AI skilled workers to keep up with the demand. That's not a small number of workers that we need to upskill before 2030. They're not going to come out of the traditional education pathway that we've had historically for sectors. We're actually going to need people to make a decision to career pivot, which is, again, enormous potential for people that are listening to this podcast that perhaps have a career in teaching or in marketing or in accounting. You know, how do you reimagine your career and what that could look like in the age of AI? If I think about more broadly, though, clients, like we regularly take a view on sentiment. You know, we released the first sentiment report for Australia last year, and we have seen, we're about to release the next one in April, and we've seen a big swift uptick in positive sentiment. And so your observations around this feels fast compared to other big technological advances that humanity has made, and you're spot on. Our analysis predicts that unlike Wi-Fi or the smartphone, that are normally a decade-style cycle, the AI cycle appears to be a five-year cycle, and we're in year three.
Wow.
So it's faster. It's twice as fast.
And I can feel it, which is exciting, but makes me think lots of different things. So, okay, $150 billion into the economy, massive, huge opportunity there. 200,000 people need to upskill in AI. What does it actually look like? What are the skills that people should be starting to learn, adopt, update their resume with? Like, what are some of the things that we should be thinking about in this next sort of, I guess, 2 to 3 years?
Well, I think understand where your organization is at is the logical starting point, just as you need to understand where you're at as an individual. Our analysis noted that, you know, 34% of companies are already investing in AI. That's a jump of 30% growth compared to where the investment levels were 6 months ago. So we're seeing more and more large organizations have a very clear roadmap of what their AI strategy is. And so I think regardless of what sector you're in, understand what your company strategy is around AI. When we talk about the economics, there's $115 billion of economic upside from a productivity perspective. And that's really going to come down to, do we have enough skilled workers to be able to implement that amount of technological change? And I think there's going to be three kind of tranches of opportunity. The first tranche is what we call everyday AI. And so what are the things that we used to manually do yesterday that we are going to use AI out of the box to do, regardless of if you're a teacher or a poet or a journalist or an accountant? And that's going to be just like your parents' relationship with ChatGPT. It's going to be just building that habit. The same way we built habits about smartphones, the same way we built habits about using our iPhones as our bank card, it requires habit shifts. And so I kind of call that tranche everyday AI. The second tranche, you know, I call super work. And that's going to be, are you going to be part of the workforce that uses AI as a core part of augmenting the way that you work? And that will mean that you perhaps have four or five agentic AI skills that you use on a regular basis to produce the impact and the output that you are, is required of you from your job. And the concept of super work or augmented work is going to be require organizations to have a really clear roadmap on what it means for job redesign. Because we've done things a very similar way, you know, in most sectors for 50, 100 years, they've always been done by humans. There's never been a technology that's been able to run so quickly alongside humans the way that agentic AI can. And so understanding what that means is important because it's going to impact every sector and every job type. And then the third tranche is, you know, do you see yourself as a person that is going to be part of the workforce, part of those 200,000 Australians that is going to be shaping the future with AI? Because that's going to require a higher level of technical skill. And that technical skill could be cybersecurity change based on AI. It could be education, writing courseware using AI. It could be a marketer working on branding using an AI, agentic AI toolset. It could be data engineering, cloud engineering. So there's a lot of technical skill that will get an additional layer of agentic AI skill. And do you have the ability to create using that tool? And we call that kind of the art of the possible. And so will you be putting yourself in the shaping the future bucket of potential? And we need Australians to make that choice. We want Australians to say, yes, I want to be part of transforming my sector, my organisation, my role for the majority of people, you know, the two-thirds that choose not to be part of reimagining the future of work.
I love that. I love the sort of the three different buckets, if you will, like obviously the people that are just going to use it every day just to maybe enhance their life, those that are going to just sort of like use it a little bit in their workplace, but maybe not be sort of creating and evolving it and shaping it. And then you've got the real creators. Now, this is a really interesting bucket for me, this one right here, because when I look at the current cybersecurity, data analysts, software engineers, it's very one gender orientated. And what my thought process has always been as we move into this new world, AI obviously is only good as the people coding it, using it, inputting things into it day to day. If that is just the same person in tech that we've always seen, aka white men, how is this going to be a inclusive, ethical world if we don't see a balanced in gender, in different diversities? That's where my concern is at the moment in terms of that piece. So I'd love to get your opinion and thoughts on that.
I think I share your concerns, Georgie. I think that traditionally the barriers for all types of diversity, not just gender, have existed in entering tech. And the good news is that AI is a great democratizer if we think about it. You don't need to learn how to code. You need to know how to use AI to code. You need to know how to use AI to quality check. And so I think that I'd flip it to the opportunity. The opportunity is to have an incredible shift in the diversity makeup of the technological workforce. For the first time, the barriers of knowledge and being a deep practitioner in particular technological backgrounds will become unlocked so that we can have people make a career pivot from marketing into cybersecurity. And it's much easier for them because the good news is like the tool set's new for everyone. There's never been a better time to pivot your career into tech. I think the other angle that I worry about and keep my eye on is the investment. Australia has over 500 AI startups, a really innovative nation that has a history of creating incredible value. I remind people that, you know, Australians invented Wi-Fi. They invented spray-on skin for burn victims. We're an incredibly innovative nation. And we need people to see the opportunity and the potential of AI and build organisations around it. And I think we're starting to see those AI startups get innovation funding, achieve seed funding. I think Harrison AI, I think Andromeda with their robot Abby. And we need women to be getting funded in that innovation. And so I'm watching kind of the analysis being done on these first few years of seed funding for AI founders, how much of that seed funding is going to female founders, and how are we thinking about the value being created? Are we just funding projects that look at taking cost out, or are we funding innovation that is transforming the way that we live, that is adding value to the quality of life for Australians? And I think that the early signals are really positive. The early signals, you know, I talk about Abby all the time from Andromeda. No one ever thought a robot could transform the patient experience in aged care, but that's what we're seeing at the forefront of AI scaling from startups in Australia. So there's huge potential. But I do think it has to be deliberate, and I think that we need to report on it and have a transparency around where is the money going and is it equitable? Because historically we know it hasn't been.
Yeah, I was reading some stats the other day that in STEM, women only hold 23% of senior management positions and just 8% of CEO roles. So I was like, oof, okay, that's quite alarming as well. But look, this is a very female-heavy audience, Catherine, and women might be listening to this now. They might be in tech, not in tech. What are some, like, let's get those with the creative juices going. Any, like, if you were somebody right now that could code, that was quite techy, any advice for people listening to this right now, like, where do you sort of see the opportunities lie in AI? Have you got any ideas? Have you got any thoughts on, like, you know, if you had all the time in the world that you don't, obviously, but if you could invest your creative juices into certain industries, and I'd love to just, like, tap into your brain of, like, what's prime for innovation? Where could we really be using AI to improve our day-to-day living, like Abby's has done for patient care? Like, what are some industries that women particularly could look at being involved in innovating and creating this sort of AI technology within?
I think there's some obvious ones that spring to mind. I think as a nation, we have a challenge around our energy transition as a nation to a more sustainable energy footprint as a nation. Doing something at that scale is going to be very hard if we're relying on humans to do all of the work. Whereas I think of the potential of AI augmenting our energy transition and what that could look like, you know, autonomous energy management across the energy grid, you know, alarming intelligence, pricing. There's a huge amount of opportunity in the energy sector to really accelerate Australia's sustainable energy ambitions. Healthcare is an obvious one. We are going to have a significant portion of the Australian population requiring a level of care and a level of personalised care that we haven't seen before in human history, at the volume we haven't seen before. So I think robotics and AI and how it can remove effort from the patient experience will be incredible. I think Harrison AI, with how AI can impact the quality and the speed of radiology, is incredible. And I think more generally, research as a whole, not just healthcare research, but research in general, AI-powered research, is going to be really incredible to watch. I think that we will solve some problems that humans have been unable to solve for a very long time, and we'll start to see some really remarkable ingenuity and invention surface. And I think that there's a difference between, do I identify myself as a builder? Like, am I a builder? Am I a founder? Or am I a transformer? And just being clear on where you want to shape your career, I think there's going to be a huge tranche of transformative work across every sector and everyone's jobs. And so if you're a person that can bring people along, build vision, deliver on your commitments, you know, it's a great choice to become a transformer. There's going to be a huge pipeline of work for you to do in this country over the next decade.
Yeah, it's It's so exciting. I think the opportunities are endless, and we're going to go on such a journey, and some companies are going to go off and achieve incredible things, and some companies are going to start things, fail forward, hopefully. But the innovation that's going to come is so exciting. The one thing that I do sort of concern myself with a little bit is those that perhaps are burying their heads in the sand a little bit. Those that, like I was reading the other day, I was listening to a podcast that in America, 60% of the population there, and this is America, obviously not Australia, but we have some American listeners as well, they don't read or write past a sixth grader. So like they're just not educated. And I fear for those people, Catherine, that maybe are in maybe not as much of a skilled working job, like their jobs could be obsolete in 5 years' time, certainly 10 years' time. And I've been listening to a few podcasts that people are talking about like a universal salary and all of this kind of stuff. And you don't want to go to doomsday, but do you see a world where perhaps there will be part of society that maybe doesn't go on this creation, innovation curve and do struggle a little bit? Do you see a possibility for that? Or do you think as human beings, we will make sure that no one gets left behind and everyone's got a job in 10 years' time? Like, what are your thoughts there?
I think that Australians are innovative and are perfectly positioned because of our kind of location and where we are to really seize the opportunity when it comes to AI. You know, there are already countries that are kind of leading the race in terms of, you know, they are net exporters of, you know, they're selling the services, that, you know, they're getting the GDP growth. And then you see the kind of next tier, next tranche of countries that are largely ingesters or net importers of AI technology. And that puts those countries in a position where they have to reimagine what is the value add to our society and what will attract investment to our nations. And so I think that you know, global markets have always created the conditions for competition and always created the competition for value. And that won't change. I think it will accelerate in the era of AI. And I think that you are seeing countries really start to review their R&D strategies, their investment in innovation and startups, and having a really burgeoning startup economy. And that's good for everyone. That's good for every Australian to have a thriving, innovative startup community in Australia. In regards to equity and inclusion, sustainable development goals, you know, what are the risks and opportunities when it comes to the disruption that AI positions? We did some research and a paper for the UN late last year, and we talked about what does it mean to give people for a dollar a day the ability to do anything that they can imagine. And it's actually quite remarkable. The democratizing impact of AI allows for far more participation in the economic upside. And we talk about the AI economy and how do we create a fair and equitable access to everyone to the AI economy. And it starts with skilling, which is why EY launched with Microsoft a couple of weeks ago the Global AI Skills Passport, which is free training, free education, across many countries. And we've made that skills passport available. I'm sure we'll put it in the podcast notes today so that you can jump on. But that's really about saying we want anyone, regardless of where they live, who they believe is their God, what their gender is, you know, everyone has the opportunity to participate in the AI economy. And I think that countries that focus that effort on how the majority of their population can participate, those countries will thrive. Those countries will be in a position where they are a global exporter because they are focusing on the creative upside as opposed to using it for automating and speeding things up. We've already done the same way for decades.
Oh God, I just love that. So a skills passport. So literally like anyone can now go and learn AI, what's coming, upskill themselves. So I just would encourage, or definitely put that in the show notes below for people to go and check that out, because, you know, you can bury yourself in the sand and pretend it's not coming, or you can grab a surfboard and you can ride this wave and you could be a part of this, which is really exciting. But I have said this on the podcast before, but it's just stuck with me because I was like, wow, I didn't realize we were this at this point in AI. So I was listening to something the other day, and it's a startup, I can't remember the name, Blackbird or something, but basically they've developed this AI tool that is a phone. It sounds like you're speaking to someone on the phone. So they were sort of saying that so many businesses lose leads and customers because if you don't respond within the first couple of minutes, you could lose that lead. So this company's come up with this tool where literally you call up what you think is, you know, the customer service, and it's all AI. So you're literally speaking to this AI bot, and they had her on loudspeaker, this AI bot. And this person was like, hi, yep. So I'm calling up, you know, I'm this business and I do this, this and this. And she was like, that sounds amazing. Tell me more about it. And they were literally having a conversation. And I thought, oh my God, there goes customer service. There goes all these roles, because why? As a business, if you've got a call center, for example, would you not implement this technology as it continues to get better? You don't have to pay them sick days. These people don't take time off. They can work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That technology is now existing in the world. And I was mind blown. I was like, I can't believe we're there already. So I guess my thought process was like, as a business, why would you employ people now to do that role, when you could literally implement this software throughout your call center, and people are probably going to get maybe even a better experience because AI is not having a bad day. They've not just had an argument with their spouse. They've not come in and they're, you know, whatever's going on at home, they're sort of bringing into work. As a business, why would you hire people to be in customer service versus implement AI? And I was just sort of thinking to myself, that could be an industry that could be no longer, that could be obsolete in a couple of years' time. And then it got me thinking about all these workers and what they were going to do and how they were going to upskill. So it does give me some hope, Catherine, that there's free tools and information education out there. And I encourage people to go and use it. But what would your advice be for like an industry like that? Because I feel like that's prime for innovation. And that could be something that if you're in a customer service facing role right now, that you might not have a job in 2-3 years' time.
I think that that's where we're starting to see some really incredible innovation. I think about, you know, I look at the Lego effect. Lego used AI to transform its customer experience, and they did it with their workforce. They did it with their customer service teams. And when they said, you know, what would you want out of an AI assistant? You know, they said, you know, what would it mean if we became interior designers instead of customer service agents? And we actually provided an outbound or a virtual interior design experience where people from the comfort of their homes can have a jump on a call and have an interior, a personalized interior design session. And at the end of the session, you know, they order the products that they liked from that design session. It gets shipped to the home. And so I think a lot of the potential that we have as a workforce is to, instead of focusing on what were the let go, like what could AI do, it's the and, it's the other side of the business case. It's if you free up this capacity and this resource from your service model, what would you reorientate it and point it towards to articulate your growth arc as a company? And the organizations that do that successfully will win, because it's about you. You've got to remember, it's got to be about organizations delivering their purpose, and part of delivering on that purpose is also delivering on their commitment and value add to society. And society will vote with their wallet. Society will vote what they value is acceptable use, and they will vote with their wallet. And so the clever organizations will be looking at the upside of the business case. They won't just look at productivity. They'll look at the art of the possible, and they'll look at what's the new value that we can offer customers. And I think that we'll see experiences and services that we've never seen before.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's not just customer service roles or anything like that. It's actually software engineering roles like Salesforce saying we're not going to hire any more developers. I mean, that's I thought if you're in tech as a software engineer, you're good. And I read that and I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. So it is impacting everyone. No one's, you know, immune to this. Even in recruitment, I think about my role and how much what I do day to day is going to shift as AI does a lot of the grunt work for me, hopefully, because where it takes the time is actually sort of like initially getting the short list of candidates. And then I apply my emotional intelligence and human skills to call, to qualify, to negotiate. That's the piece that I'm obviously using my human skills for. But the actual sourcing, I could get very excited about the idea of AI doing that part for me. And then me being able to actually speak to candidates and really qualifying great talent. So every industry is going to be impacted, but you're so right. Like there's going to be a positive, hopefully knock-on effect. And hopefully we're going to really then be utilizing human beings for what they do best and really enabling them to apply even more skills that perhaps and even more untapped potential because they were too busy doing all these things that sucked up their time that AI can now do for them. So it's going to be a really interesting, really interesting world. But it did fascinate me when Salesforce came out to say they're no longer going to be hiring devs. I thought, oh, that's interesting. But I don't think they went on to say what the roles are going to be like instead of.
But that's where I think about, you know, even the journey we've been on at EY. You know, we have the largest private AI platform in the world. We have over 400,000 team members. We have an 85% adoption rate on AI and invest an incredible amount of time in upskilling and micro-credentialing our workforce so that they're really comfortable with the best tools in the world when it comes to AI. And I didn't know that there was going to be a huge demand for agentic persona writers or, you know, how do you work on the tone and the quality of language, you know, people that were traditionally in a role of, say, a journalist and are writing articles are now writing character personas for agentic AI. Like the creative need is still there. The pub test, like does what you're building pass the pub test with AI is still there. And it's humans. It's humans' ability to critique. It's humans' ability to understand the nuance of what a customer wants and then shaping the experience to meet that need. That's going to be far greater and far more diversified than ever. If I think about, you know, what does a retail experience look like with an organization that's run-of-the-mill, they will replace humans with AI and you'll get an agentic AI experience. It'll be the same for everyone. You've got that kind of next tier up where they've got a team of, you know, customer success designers that are focused on particular personas and maintaining and managing the experience for particular segments of their customers and maintaining the quality of the relationship between agentic AI and their customer set. It creates a whole new wave of what does marketing look like and customer experience look like in the age of agentic AI. And then you'll have the top end of town that will say these tranches of customers are going to get a personal one-on-one banking experience that they've never had before because we only could certainly scale it for this tranche of our customers, but now we can scale human experience to mean this because we have agentic that can do that. And so they're going to reorientate how they differentiate their customer experience in market. And so I think that the trick is to understand the value and power of automation and orchestration, but don't miss the opportunity to reimagine and create the art of the possible, because I think that humans will vote with their wallet and they're going to buy new and personalized when they feel special, when they feel VIP. And that requires a laser-like focus on what the customer experience is. And it means putting humans in the center of your AI strategy. Your workforce and your customers must sit at the center of your AI strategy.
I think that's just such solid advice and probably what what most businesses are thinking, as opposed to how can we lower costs, increase AI to, you know, sort of get rid of that sort of part of the workforce. And then we're saving money over here by implementing this technology over here. And I feel like that's the dangerous thought process, which is why as leaders, especially in technology, we need to make sure that we're thinking with our hearts as well as our heads, and making sure that this new like world of tech and roles and things isn't just sort of led in the, is still with our wallets, right? Like in terms of the way leaders speak, and making sure we're bringing people into this transformation, we're upskilling, reskilling, and bringing people on the journey with us. Because I feel like the fear in the marketplace right now is, oh my God, my job's going to be obsolete. Whereas I feel like it's the job of leaders now to actually say, no, you are very much the center of this new workflow, this new AI roadmap that we're creating. We want you to be a part of this. And I feel like that message needs to be spread more and more and more, because it's very much going the other way. You go onto Twitter, you know, X, whatever it's called now, YouTube, it's very much that jobs are going to be obsolete. It's very doomsday. Whereas I feel like we need to flip the message and actually say, this is a positive. And this is how we're going to all come together, tech and humans, and create this new world, and how exciting that we get to be a part of this. But yeah, that's not the messaging market that I'm seeing a lot of at the moment, especially not on the web, or not on the internet anyway, which is very much a bit more of a doomsday from what I'm seeing. But maybe that's just my algorithm, because my brain sort of like goes off on these tangents sometimes. But the other thing I was going to ask you is, like, you did talk to your young girl, your wonderful daughter at the event. What are you advising your young girls, your children? Because I feel like this is another parents are scratching their heads at the moment. Like, how can we prepare our children to really thrive, not just survive, in this new world? What are you suggesting and coaching on?
Well, the debates I have with my 14-year-old and 10-year-old are around decision making and what are the skills that they're going to need to make effective decisions, critical thought, those soft skills. And so the arguments we've been having are around things like choosing to do mathematics all the way through high school, because the foundation of AI is maths. The foundation of quantum computing is maths. You are going to have to use an uncomfortable amount of maths if you are working in the AI sector, whether it be governance, whether it be accuracy, whether it be hallucinations or bias. You're going to have to be comfortable with maths. You're going to have to be comfortable with return on investment and business casing and tracking impact and analytics. So whether they like it or not, we've kind of agreed that maths is going to play a central part of their education journey. Two, you have to be in technology. Similarly, the Australian education system allows you to opt out of technology at year 9. It's no longer like a mandatory part of the education journey. And I've said to my girls, you cannot opt out. You must do technology every single year, as well as, you know, I have my eldest doing her AI skills passport because I want her to be micro-credentialed early. I want her to understand what is the difference between machine learning and generative AI, and what are the things that will keep you safe? What is an algorithm? All of the things that we have learned as adults over the last 2 decades and the kind of explosion of all the different digital technologies that have come out, at its very foundation, maths and decision-making form a part of it. I also think there will be an explosion of demand for psychological skills, psychology, psychiatry, market-based insights. So what makes people tick? I think that when you focus just on the machines, I think what we are going to learn is that the more and more we know, the more and more we don't know. And the things that we will, the things that we thought we knew are going to be proven wrong. And we're going to have to relearn and re-understand what do people want. And that comes down to the basics and fundamentals of psychology, So I think there'll be an explosion of psychology degrees across a whole new raft of disciplines, like psychology of AI, psychology of marketing, psychology of cybersecurity. I think that there'll be a new renaissance, and the psychology degree will come back in really centre and quite critical as a part of the skill set, as we seek to understand human decision making.
I couldn't agree more. Or we're just, you know, we've got such severe mental health issues because we're so sort of stuck to our iPhones and our laptops, and we just need to go and see a psychologist to help us deal with all of the uncertainty and panic. But it's not going to be like that. So I'm sort of half joking there. But yeah, I think that's such solid advice, and all the parents listening to this, I'm sure, are making notes right now, because that's sort of what I would be encouraging if I was a parent right now. Because I think it's the human skills as well as the technical skills that are going to be equally as important in this next decade. So looking ahead, let's just pretend that we're 10 years into the future and we're having another conversation, Catherine, we're on the Career Comps podcast. What would you like to have seen happen? I know it's a big question, so yeah, obviously take your time, but I'd love to sort of hear your thoughts on it. If everything goes well, if everything has worked out the way you'd like it to, what does that scenario look like for you?
If I think about the first decade of any mass disruption event, there's the best indicator of the future is the past. And so if I think about, you know, what are your leaders doing? What are the laggards doing? You know, what is the bridge or the delta? How long will it take you to go from laggard to leader? All of those things, those time horizons have halved. So if you're in front and it took you 2 years to get in front of your competitors, it'll take half as much time for them to catch you in the era of AI. So I think we're relitigating how quickly things can be disrupted is going to be part, an uncomfortable part of this next decade, and being comfortable with the speed and velocity of change. People that are generalists are going to really thrive. I know that there's a number of pieces of research around the rise of the generalist. I think being multidisciplinarily skilled really serves people during times of disruption. And then we're going to see some countries do incredibly well at positioning their nation to be an innovative nation and a creative nation. I think organizations and countries that put humans at the center will thrive. And I think you're starting to see announcements like what are the signals? You know, the Singaporean government coming out and saying, we're going to have an education stipend for people over the age of 40 to be educated in AI so that they can be an active participant in the AI economy. Like, they're the sorts of signals I see from countries that have made a conscious choice to be a leader. And that means bringing people along for the journey. And so I think people that put humans at the center will thrive. And I'm just excited. If I think about all of the problems that you wish that there was a solution for, but you didn't have the skill, you didn't have the know-how, and for the first time, you can ask something. You can literally, to your point, speak to something with conversational AI and get assistance and help in a faster, more cost-effective way than you ever have before, I truly think the future is going to be incredibly bright. I think that we're going to see a new creative era. I really think the renaissance of the creator is what I look forward to most. I think it's been far too long since the Renaissance period, where artisans and creators and writers and artists and painters really were celebrated and a huge part of shaping the future. And I am glad that we as a species are going to go through another creative period in our history.
I completely agree. And I feel like I'm really optimistic about what it means for the world of work as well, because we haven't adopted the way we work since the Industrial Revolution, right? Which was just basically programming us to be factory workers, right? Like, let's get back to creativity, which is not a 9-to-5 sit at your desk job. This is what an AI can enable. This is, let's just let people be creative, almost work the hours that they want to work as well. Cause I'm so creative in the morning past 4 or 5 o'clock, you know, I'm doing admin tasks. I'm not thinking. It's like, give people the freedom and the autonomy that's use this technology. And like you say, go into this next creative phase where people can really be allowed to embrace that, create, fail forward, try lots of different things, take some risks. I feel like that's what's needed if we're going to adapt and thrive in this next generation. And I'm excited for, like this new world of work, what that looks like, how that can really support women as well, and make sure that they're set up for success as well. But just curious, final sort of few questions, Catherine. One is, like, talking to the world of work right now, do you see that we could be going into a bit more of a work stream where people are going to be a bit more of a gig economy, like people coming in to do sort of more freelance based work? Do you see more remote happening, or what do you see in terms of that disruption there of like our working lives? Because there's a lot of talk around this at the moment and what that could open up.
I think we'll see more of the same. So, I working in a startup, if you decide to found a startup, you know, you're going to work incredibly hard for an incredibly, intense period of time as you're in builder phase. If you're in a transformer phase, there's kind of a beginning and an end, and you kind of have a clear horizon of how intense your period of work is going to be. And if you don't want to participate in either of those two future of work dynamics, then, be prepared. You may have your boat capsized. Like, that's just the pragmatic reality of what a disruption like AI can create for people, because it's going to touch every part of the way that we work and live. If I think about the individual, and I'm speaking to the women listening on this podcast, we are very good, and I don't know why we are, of being busy and unintentionally prioritizing busy over important, and making a conscious choice about your career in year 3 of the Gen AI disruption that is occurring. It's not too late. Like, there's never been a better time than 2025 to make a decision about your career based on what will AI do to my sector, qualifications, industry. And so take the time to do that career audit and set yourself a new choice about where you want to play, and take the time to prioritize getting skilled. I think that we often put the needs of others first. We put our families first. We put our customers or clients first. We put our jobs first. And then we get to the end and we go, oh, I didn't do the thing that I needed to do that was most critical for myself and my career. And I'm specifically saying it because I stood in front of, a room full of women at Women in Tech Fest in Sydney, and I asked people to put up their hands, and I said, put up your hand if you've used AI today. Majority of people had put their hand up. I then said, put your hand up if you've completed AI training in the last 12 months. Everyone pretty much put their hand up. I then asked the question, put your hand up if you received a formal qualification that you can put on your LinkedIn profile based on the AI training and use that you've done. And maybe 2% of the room put their hand up. And that, to me, is the biggest gap. We're changing the habits. We'll complete the mandatory training. But will we go the last mile and do the piece of work for ourselves that is most important for our career in this particular moment? And the answer is, we put it at the back of the to-do list. We will find another time. Whereas I'm saying, make that time now. Make this year be the year that you do that, because it will pass you by. The people that are are already qualified, are already doing the majority of the work and making the majority of the decisions. You have to upskill yourself and choose to be in the room where it happens. Choose to be part of programs that are transforming your organization so that you can be part of the influence of shaping the future. And skilled allows you that confidence. There's something about having that piece of paper that gives you the confidence to say, I understand what bias means. Yep, I understand what safe and responsible AI means. And so that's my hope and wish for people listening to this call. Prioritize getting the credential. Prioritize stepping into the conversation about AI in your organization.
So powerful. Just prioritize yourself. I think that's the key thing. Like, you know, I mean, obviously you're in a business partner, Pam, prime example, right? She's running around circles over her children, everything else she's got going on in her world, trying to run a business. And, you know, she does really struggle to prioritize herself sometimes. I'm constantly saying to her, you know, when was the last time you did something for you? When was the last time you did something to upskill yourself? And she, yeah, like she's probably a prime example of a lot of women listening to this podcast. But you're so right, Catherine, we can't be passive now. We have to get in the driver's seat of our own careers and our own lives, because otherwise the world in the next 10 years isn't going to be the world that you and I would love it to be, where AI is definitely building great, ethical, diverse, inclusive organizations, companies, products, everything. Because if we only have one person creating all of this new tech and innovation, the world's not going to look good in 10 years' time. And that's my biggest concern with it all, which is why I wanted to get you on today to have this conversation. Look, we've talked about a lot of things today. Is there anything else, Catherine, that you want to leave the audience with before we wrap up today? Anything we haven't touched upon that you think we should have spoken about today?
I think the shift in mindset for me is the thing I'd leave people with. It can be easy to ignore something that you don't understand, and it's very easy to be fearful about something that you don't understand. And so I talk about, what does it mean to have an AI first mindset? What does it mean to believe in AI for good? And once you have that mindset, every meeting, every conversation, every task that you do, you suddenly think, could AI be doing this? Could AI be helping me do this? How would I use AI to change this, to enable me to free up my capacity to do something different? There is a mindset shift that we need a lot of people to choose to make. And it starts with choosing to see the world differently and choosing to reimagine things. And, you know, I'm struck by the power of AI. Like, when you have an interaction with AI that blows you away, it's because it feels like magic. You actually can't believe the speed in which something can be created, the problem that can be solved, the way that the conversational AI speaks back to you and feels so uncomfortably real. It feels magical when it's done really well. And so the way I think about it is, if instead of the word AI, we replaced it with the word magic, would you choose to prioritize your approach to it differently? If you said, we're giving you the opportunity to be upskilled in magic, to be able to create with magic, to be able to build businesses with magic, would you choose that for yourself? And I think that the majority of the answers would be yes. So how do you let go of the fear, the lack of knowledge, and all of the things that you naturally lean away from the words artificial intelligence? How do you just imagine AI as magic and lean towards it?
So powerful, and such an incredible reframe as well. And I'm definitely going to use that now. Anytime I have a moment of fear or concern about the pace of change and where we're going and what that means, I'm going to be like, no, this is magic. This is going to create magic in the world. I love, love, love that. Final question. Somebody's listening to this right now. Where should they begin? Where should they start? Obviously, the free course with EY and Microsoft. the passport that you spoke about. Phenomenal. We'll pop that in the show notes. Anything else that someone can do to start really getting in the driver's seat and embracing this new tech and this new magic?
Yeah, use your commutes wisely. Listen to a podcast. There's look up artificial intelligence podcasts. Follow your favorite chief technology officers that are, you know, talking about how their company is transforming their strategy and the way they work using. Because I think real world stories help. We need to be talking about it and be comfortable with talking about it at a barbecue. And so follow the people that are in the driver's seat in this era and on LinkedIn. Use your commute to listen to podcasts and to do your micro-credentialing and just start. It'll be amazing how you will see the world differently. It's like when you buy a new car or you make the decision to buy a new car and then suddenly you see that car everywhere. It is the same. AI is the same. Once you choose to lean towards it, it's actually quite amazing at what surfaces for you.
I completely agree. Catherine, so good as always to have you on. And for those who don't yet follow Catherine, please, we'll put the show notes to Catherine's LinkedIn profile below. And thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and your wisdom with us all. And you've definitely made me feel a sense of calm, optimism, excitement, because I feel like I can go on a bit journey sometimes if I go down the wrong rabbit hole with it. And you've definitely sort of brought me back into the optimistic AI movement, the magic that's going to come from this. So thank you. It's been an amazing conversation.
Loved it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thank you so much for doing that. And I can't wait to share the next episode with you.